All right, so my title was Hopf algebras and parafermions, but it was kind of slightly dishonest because I had to say something general enough that I could talk about more or less anything. Really what I'm going to talk about is models with topological zero modes, especially in one dimension. So there will be some parafermions at least. There will be some tensor categories, so you could say there's some Hopf algebras too. And there's even some relation to Hopf algebra gauge theory, but I probably won't really get around to explaining that, so if you want to ask me later. Also this talk is a bit of an experiment, so I'll have the blackboard for the first 40 minutes or something, and then hopefully in the last 15 minutes I'm showing you some slides of results that we actually did with numerics. So really, topological zero modes or full spectrum degeneracy So the idea here is that, let's wax philosophical for a little bit. So in general, if we think about condensed matter physics, then we think about low energy physics. And so if we write down a Hamiltonian, a lot of the time we're actually not so interested in what happens at very high energies, but only at what happens at low energies, you know, the first couple of excitations maybe, and especially the ground state, right? currently there's a lot of interest in phenomena and condensed matter models, at least. I wouldn't say experiments yet, but models that depend on the entire energy spectrum. So one of the current trends is, for example, this many-body localization, where you look at the entire energy spectrum of a Hamiltonian, and then you want to know, for example, if the eigenstates generically have volume law or area law for their entanglement. If you split the system into bits. This is a question you also ask about the very high energy states. And it turns out there are interesting transitions between different behaviors if you change the parameters. Now, that's not what I want to talk about today. So I want to talk about topological models, models which have topological order. What I really want to do is think about topological degeneracy. So we're used to the idea that the topological field theory in a condensed matter model really only emerges at very low energies. There was some discussion earlier this week about whether the topological field theory is maybe completely determined only by the ground states of the model, or only applies to ground states of the model. But I want to start from the idea that we have some model with topological order, and somehow some of this topological order extends all the way up the spectrum. And actually, the strange thing is, this talk, we focus on this full spectrum degeneracy. We want to look at find mostly 1D models where topological degeneracy extends to all the energy levels all the way up. And this should happen in a stable way. So if we look at topological models which are purely topological, there's no dynamics of any kind, then it's pretty easy to get this. But then if you add a small perturbation, then typically you lose this property. But we want to look at models where you can do this stably. So if you change the Hamiltonian a little bit, it still will have this property to exponentially good precision in the system size. Right. Okay, so... right. First of all, this full spectrum degeneracy is familiar from models, of course. So for example, if you look at these triaviro type or string net type models, and I'll just consider the torque code quickly. Then, we're all familiar with the idea that the torque code, if you put it on the torr, say, then it has these four ground states, right? The one where there's no loop around either of the cycles, the one where there's a loop around the meridian, loop around the longitude. It's the other way around. This is the longitude, but okay. And both, right? Okay, and so this one way to look at why this degeneracy is there is because we could say, well, there are operators that send us between these states, and these operators are symmetries of the Hamiltonian. And of course, from symmetry operators. So in particular, we can make a Z string or an X string on the dual or direct lattice. So if we, just to remind you, think about a square lattice, right? Then I can draw strings on this lattice. For example, I can draw a sigma X string along the direct links here, right? Or I can draw a sigma z string on the dual lattice, so if this lattice is a periodic boundary condition, so is the torus, then these are both symmetry operators for the Hamiltonian, right? Because the Hamiltonian has Plaquette terms with sigma x's. And it has, star terms with sigma z's in my convention here. So these are two symmetries. They don't commute because they intersect each other in this one link here. And sigma x and sigma z don't commute. So therefore, we have two non-commuting symmetries. We could call this x on the meridian, x on the longitude, if you like. Right. This x on the longitude. Right, and this operator here, z on the meridian. Then of course you have xl times zm is minus zm times xl, and xl commutes with h, and so does zm. And then because of that, we know we already have at least two-fold degeneracy. Then we have two more operators, and we get four-fold degeneracy for the x loop in the other direction and the z loop in the other direction. So we're all very aware of this, I hope. but the point is that because we have these operators, actually the degeneracy is good for any state in the toric code. It's not just for the ground state, right? So this degeneracy is good. guarantee degeneracy. For all states. Right. So, you know, if I decided to make some excitations, you know, maybe there are some excitations with the direct string between them here, then I would have also the state where I inserted this loop, right, etc., and the state where I inserted that loop. And the state where I insert both of them, and they would all be degenerate, because these loops are essentially just inserted by these symmetry operators, and the symmetry operators don't commute, so... okay. Now... Now, an obvious question is, well, what happens if I change the Hamiltonian a little bit? Do I keep this degeneracy? Right, so... so, full spectrum degeneracy, what if H is perturbed? So, for example, we could take the new Hamiltonian to be the torque code Hamiltonian, and then we add some magnetic field term. Sum of all links, sigma z at a given link. Right. So this thing would prefer for the links to not be colored, if you like. So it doesn't like strings, so it's trying to shorten all the strings. Another way you could think about it is that it's creating plaquette excitations, because if I apply sigma z somewhere, then I create plaquette excitations either side of that link, right? But now we have an argument for the ground state anyway, that if h is small enough, there should be no splitting of this degeneracy up to exponentially small corrections. Due to this point, and that's the topological protection of the ground state. So this is string tension. Long strings cost. And I think you could probably argue for this kind of model that... so what's the argument? It says that... okay, if I want to split the degeneracy between these four states, right, then what I need to do is I need to apply terms from this Hamiltonian until I can get from, for example, this state to that state, so I can couple them together using the perturbation. But obviously, at first order, I can only make a single link. So that will definitely not couple the empty state to the state with the ring around. So at second order, I can make a product of two links. And then eventually, if I make the order large enough that I can go all the way around this hole, then I can couple these together. So I'll get some splitting at the order which is proportional to the linear size of the torus. Right? We're all familiar with this argument. And you should think that the same kind of thing should apply also, even if you have a couple of excitations present, right? Because you still need to go from here to here, essentially. So it's clear that you can't do that at first order or second order or whatever order in perturbation theory until you reach an order that's proportional to the linear size of the torus. But on the other hand, if I start making lots and lots and lots of excitations, then this argument is not so clear anymore at all. And in fact, we know, of course, that there's a phase transition where these excitations really become confined because strings get shorter. But even before the phase transition, it's very non-clear to me anyway, whether if you go somewhere halfway up the energy spectrum, you have non-zero energy density, whether this degeneracy is at all protected. I think it probably is not. anyway, so topological protection. Another question is whether topological protection is good also for phases that don't come from these projector Hamiltonians, for slightly excited states. For states with few excitations. But what about high energy states? Right. Not clear to me anyway. okay, so what I want to do so it's certainly not true that in any topological model that you can just add a term like this and then expect that high energy states will still have topological degeneracy, even if they had it before before you added this term. Should break degeneracy. Okay, so nevertheless, in one dimension, we have a very important model where we do have this behavior that the also the degeneracy at high energy is protected, and this is the actually the Kitaev chain or the Majorana chain. So, so in one, we have 1D models with protected degeneracy or zero modes. So one thing you should notice here is that, of course, these symmetry operators are immediately not symmetry operators anymore as soon as I add this term here, because they don't commute. Well, the one with sigma x's doesn't commute with this one. But you might hope that you could somehow deform these operators a little bit as a function of h to find new operators that will commute. So the question is whether this is something that you can do, and under what circumstances can you do this? Okay, so the simplest model here is just the fermions on a wire. Okay, Kitaev wire. So motivation is you have fermions hopping on a wire. The Hamiltonian is something like you have a chemical potential. Sum of C dagger C, I equals 1 to L, minus 1 half. And then you have some hopping terms and some pairing terms. So this is a sort of semi-realistic model for a wire with electrons or some type of particle hopping on sites I equals 1 to through L, right? Okay. And now what Kitaev noticed, which you've obviously also seen before, or probably most of you anyway, is that you can rewrite this model in terms of Majorana fermions. So we define the two Majorana fermions for each direct fermion. Gamma 2j minus 1 is equal to e to the minus I theta over 2 cj plus e to the I theta over 2 cj dagger and gamma 2j will be minus I e to the minus I theta over 2. This is 1/2, sorry. Cj plus I e to the I theta over 2 Cj dagger. So these are Hermitian operators. They square to the identity and that they have the anti-commute at different sites. Different labels, of course, they're also anti-commute if they're originally from the same site. And then we can rewrite the Hamiltonian in this way. Minus mu sum over I equals 1 to L of gamma 2i minus 1 gamma 2i minus t sum over I equals 1 to L minus 1 gamma 2i gamma 2i I minus 1 I plus 1. Okay, good. And then if you stare at this for just a minute and see, oh, wait a minute. If I look at the new sites for the Majorana fermions, right, so these two were site together before, 1 and 2. These two were a site together, and these two were a site together, and these two were a site together. So you always have an even number of sites now. And then, well, these have a mu term, coupling them together, which makes sense because they're on the same site, so it's chemical potential. And these have a T term, and these have a mu term again, and these have a T term again, these have a mu term again, and these have a T term again, etc., like this. Oh, and I got rid of some stuff here, so what did I do? I set T equal to delta here. So there's no delta anymore. Okay, now if you look at this structure, then you say, wait a minute, there's an interesting limit where I can just take the mu to zero, and then I have a bunch of decoupled dimers. And then the operators that act here at the ends, they just hang loose. So and gamma 1 and gamma 2L just don't appear in the Hamiltonian anymore. But of course, they're still anti-commute. And now they also commute with Hamiltonian. So we're in the same situation as with the Tor code before, that we have two of these zero-mode operators that are giving us degeneracy. In this case, twofold degeneracy. Okay, but in this model we can actually look at whether this degeneracy is stable. It's localized here. The operators are localized at the edges, and that gives us a strategy to try and look what happens if you add a perturbation. Maybe what happens is that you can deform these operators by letting them go into the edge a little bit. So instead of being just gamma 1 and gamma 2L, there'll be some sum of you know, gamma 1 and then some coefficient gamma 2 and then some gamma 3 and gamma 4, etc., like that. And maybe we can help use that to make the idea work that they still commute. Okay. So again, I'm not really telling you anything new, maybe, but it's interesting to think about what the features are that make this work. Right. So, you might ask some questions about why this is topological here. One thing you can see is that this Hamiltonian is a symmetry, which is the parity of the number of fermions. So there are never any terms that create a single or an odd number of fermions. But the zero modes are changing that number, gamma 1 and gamma L. They both create a single fermion. So they do something that is sort of topologically non-trivial. You shouldn't really be able to do that locally. Another thing that you should maybe say before going on is that this model is also the Ising model. This is also the transverse Ising model. If you do a non-local Jordan-Wigner transformation, which I don't want to explain now, but it's then you get H's minus T times sum over sigma z I and I plus 1, so neighboring sites, and then minus mu sum over sigma x I. And so I will, from now on, probably use J and F for these variables because they appear in the slides later and it kind of matches nicely with the nicer with the Ising model. But you can see here that it's a lot less obvious what the zero modes are, but the symmetry is much more much more obvious. So symmetry minus 1 to the F from the fermions, the fermion parity, it corresponds to the product of sigma x over all sites. So just flipping all the spins simultaneously, which is obviously just, if you have two ground states, it means you're in a ferromagnetic phase where you can flip over all the spins and get another ground state. Okay. Good. So, which happens when t is larger than u, obviously, also, so that makes sense. Okay, so now the idea is that we can iteratively construct zero modes also for mu not equal to zero. And in fact, if we can also do it even if we add extra perturbation terms, with, for example, for four fermion interactions or next nearest neighbor spin couplings or this kind of things, but I don't want to show that because then I've spent the entire rest of the talk. So how can we do this? Well, we just write, we assume, of course, that mu is less than t. And then we write, let's say the left zero mode, psi L, it's going to be gamma 1 plus, that's the zero order term, then we have mu over t times psi 1 of L plus mu over t squared times psi 2 of L, etc. So we just add higher and higher or higher order contributions. And the idea is that these are supported further into the chain. And so if we just write, and of course what we want is that if I write this sum here into into the commutator with Hamiltonian, right, then the commutator should be zero up to order mu over t to the next power. Right. So we can, by adding a term, we remove a power of contribution to the commutator every time. Okay, and then if you look at this for a minute, then you see you can do this pretty easily in this case. So you can actually find well, first of all, I need to say something about the strategy, but anyway, so let's say that we start with just gamma 1. If we commute this with the Hamiltonian, this is, of course, gamma 1 commuted with the t part of the Hamiltonian, plus gamma 1 commuted with the mu part of the Hamiltonian. Right. Now, we know this is 0. Because it doesn't have gamma 1 in it. And this part has a term minus mu times, and then we have gamma 1, gamma 2. And then this commutator is easy to calculate, and you just get. Well, the gamma 1s cancel if I go from this side, and if I go from the other side, then I get a minus sign, which cancels the minus sign from the commutator, and then the gamma 1s cancel off again. So I essentially get minus 2 mu gamma 2. Okay, so then the idea is now we have to add something to gamma 1, which is proportional to mu over t, to cancel off this minus 2 mu gamma 2. And I actually have lots of space. So we say, okay, let's write the commutator of gamma 1 plus mu over t times psi left 1 with h now. Well, we already know the commutator from gamma 1, so that's just and then, of course, we get mu over t commutator of psi left 1 ht plus commutator of psi left with h mu. And what we want is that, okay, this thing is minus 2 mu gamma 2 here. And this should cancel this somehow. But this term has a mu in the gamma mu, so that's order mu squared. So that's never going to do it for us. So we need to use this term to get an order mu term to cancel that. So we need to make sure that psi doesn't commute with psi L1 doesn't commute with HT. So we want psi L1, HT. Is plus 2 mu gamma 2. But H2, if we look at what terms with gamma 2 does it have, well, it has HT, sorry. It just has gamma 2, gamma 3. So we may as well replace this by 2 times gamma, minus T times gamma 2, gamma 3. And then we see, okay, well, the T's are canceling. I need to choose something here that commutes with gamma 2, gamma 3 to give me gamma 2. So I should take gamma 3, obviously. Take psi L1 is gamma 3. Works. And the nice thing about that is it also, well, then, of course, I also get the contribution from the other term, with h mu, but that will be proportional to mu squared. So that I can try to cancel in the next step of my iterative procedure. So if I keep going, then I get psi left. Gamma 1 plus mu over t gamma 3 plus mu over t squared gamma 5 plus mu over t to the third gamma 7, etc. Get the idea. And so I see that there are contributions that go further and further into the chain, but they also exponentially reduce as a function of mu over t. And it's the Now, I get a similar thing on the right. And so what will happen is that this will then, of course, exponentially decrease if you go towards the left. And so if you calculate the overlap of the left and right, or the commutator of the left and right zero modes, then it will be exponentially small in the system size, because the only when you look at the terms that see each other, they have a total power of mu over t to the n together, to the length of the chain together. So psi left, psi right, anti-commutator, sorry, will be of order. E to the minus, well, L, sorry, mu over t to the minus, to the L, where L is the length of the chain. Right, so we have two, and of course they also commute to order L with the Hamiltonian, so we still have two zero modes that are pretty much perfectly good. They give us a degeneracy between all states up to exponentially small corrections in the length of the chain. And so we have degeneracy for all states up to order mu over t to the L. Right. So now you might say, well, okay, this was a very special change to the Hamiltonian. I only added this mu term, and it's still quadratic. And why would I even think that this is at all generic? But the strategy here can be repeated for other perturbations. So if you see what happened here, I just put ht here, but I could put some arbitrary. Sorry, I put h mu here, but I could put some arbitrary perturbation v. Instead of h mu, which might have, four fermion interactions or next nearest neighbor hopping or whatever you want. And then you get an equation that basically says that you want arbitrary perturbation V, then we to HT, then the natural thing to ask for is that we want to solve H T psi M commutator should be equal to M plus 1 should be equal to minus the commutator of V with psi N plus order of the constant with which this is added to the N plus 2. So this gives you a strategy to try and construct these zero motor operators for any perturbation just by doing iterative construction to the middle. Now, of course, there's no guarantee that this solution, that this equation always has a solution, and the solution might not be unique. But it's a strategy anyway, so it's a class of models that is good to look at, where you have this idea that okay, things break into pieces. You get something that lives right here. If you don't have a perturbation, then if you add perturbation, you can try and construct the degeneracy into the system. Right. Now, I'm spending a lot more time than I was hoping I would. Okay, so we would like to generalize this idea. Other models. This is where the perfermions come in. So one generalization that is popular now is perfermions. And I should have given some references at the start, which I will do now quickly. So the most important references for the models, anyway, a lot of this owes a lot to a paper by Paul Fendley, which is, I'll just give the archive number, but it's in Journal of Statistical Mechanics. And we wrote a paper ourselves. I wrote a paper with a couple of co-authors, which you'll see in a minute. Which you'll see in a minute. Okay, so, but this is a good place to start this paper. The idea is that you just replace the Majorana fermions here by parafermions. So, what are parafermions? Say, well, okay, now we have operators gamma I such that gamma I times gamma j is omega times gamma j times gamma I, if I is greater than j. So these are site labels, right? So we still have sites 1 to n. And omega is just an nth root of unity. Let's say just a primitive nth root of unity. So the order really matters if I obviously have to change this to omega inverse if I change the order here. And then you can write Hamiltonian now, which is essentially of the same form as before. So H will be minus J times, and then there's some omega factor, which is not so important, but okay. Then there's some angle, and then some over gamma dagger 2x, gamma 2x plus 1. So you can't make these self-adjoint, so plus Hermitian conjugate. That's your J term. And then there's an F term, so this is your, or hopping, V you like tea. And then there's an F term, which is like your mu before. And it also has an angle, which... And then there's gamma dagger 2x minus 1 gamma 2x. Okay, so let's ignore all the angles and stuff for now. Then you see that this has precisely the same kind of shape that we had before, that, you know, the first pair is disconnected by, let's say, by F, and then the second pair is connected by J, right? F, J, F, J, F, J, like this. And so if I switch F off, then I clearly have a zero mode, which is now the pair fermion acting on the first site, and also the pair fermion acting on the last site. Yes. 5 minutes? Oh, wow. Well, I started late, though.
Yeah, 10 minutes question.
Okay. Okay, so I'm really seriously running over time here. So what do I want to say about this? Okay, so you might think it has... zero modes. Gamma 1 and gamma L, right? These are zero modes, and it gives degeneracy, an n-fold degeneracy. But then you might, this is only if F equals 0. And then you might say, well, what if we switch F back on? Can we do a similar construction to here? And naively, everything looks great. But it turns out it's way more complicated what actually happens. So if you, depending on this, on these angles, especially that one, if you set this angle to zero, for example, then it turns out the zero mode breaks already at first order in perturbation theory. But then if you make it slightly non-zero, then it looks like you can have arbitrarily high, that you can have the zero mode again to arbitrarily high order in perturbation theory. So the question is like, what's going on? Why is this working like this? Another interesting thing to ask is why is this, which I really wanted to show you, is how this is related to tensor categories. So you can rewrite this. Also, as a golden chain type or anion chain, so the idea is that your Hilbert space is all the fusion trees that you can get from a bunch of anions. So for the simplest case, the Ising model or the Majorana fermions before, we say, okay, well, I have a bunch of sigma type anions. I could think of these, you know, from the Ising topological field theory, or I can think of them as boundary defects, if you like, which makes more sense if you want to have them in a line. The Hilbert space is just what are the fusion channels here. One psi here, this is ultimately sigma. One or psi here, this is sigma again. And this is one or psi again. And it turns out that there's a nice unitary map between this model and a model like this. This turns out to be the same as the Ising model or the Majorana chain. I have to say what the Hamiltonian is, but obviously have the same Hilbert space, but the Hamiltonian is just that you look at pairs of adjacent ones, adjacent sigmas, and then they have a fusion channel, one or psi. And you assign an energy to 1 and an energy to psi. Einstein energies, E1, E psi, to the charge of neighboring pairs. Depending on the fusion channel. Right. Okay, so you can do this also for pair fermions. It's the same, but with the Tambari-Yamagami categories. For Zn. So what you do is you say, well, I have this fusion here, sigma times sigma is, for example, 1 plus, or psi 0 plus psi 1 plus psi 2. For this is a Z3 case. So these three form a Z3 under fusion, and I need a new chalk. Oh, it's disappeared on one of these. Okay. Yeah. There we go. With sigma times psi I is sigma, and psi I times psi j, psi I plus j. Modulo n. So here we have psi 0 plus psi n if it's Zn. And you can do the same Hamiltonian where you just assign, you assign energies to the neighboring fusion channels and you actually reproduce this model. There's a nice unitary transformation. But this model is particularly good because, well, you can change the basis really running out, sorry. Yeah. That I skipped, and so all I really wanted, I wanted to show a few slides at the end because we have some interesting results that I really want to show you. So maybe if you could bring the projector down, then I can maybe have a few minutes to do that. Thank you. So what I still want to say quickly about this chain, to do on the left board, is that in all these chain models, which you could do for any fusion category, you can then, for example, change to this basis. Right, we're here now. And this basis is particularly good because what you see is that now all the degrees of freedom here, which correspond to the J terms or the T terms, they're already diagonal. Right, if we have to say, well, this is an F term, this is a J term, this is an F term, this will be a J term again, etc., like this. Right, and then if we change to this basis, then it's obvious that now all the J terms are diagonal. And it's also obvious that here at the last one, you have a quantum number that is totally invisible to these terms, that's a degeneracy. And what you see also is that if you act with the F terms, then they will scramble the labels on the neighboring J terms. So so you can think of these labels as the main wall labels. For easing. The F terms will move and create these. And the only F term that depends on this global label here is the one at the end. Only this sees the global charge. This one. So only this one can actually couple the states that were degenerate together. Okay, so now let's hope that's... Sorry? Yeah, thanks. Okay, so that's the paper. It will be on the slides later. These are my co-authors. And here's the spectrum of a chain for n equals 3. If you turn off the F term, so if you just have, it's just, you know, these commuting J terms here. And the reason that it's moving around is because you can choose the energies for the 3. You can have E1, E psi 0, E psi 1, and E psi 2. And I've parameterized these in a way, these are parameterized in a way where you say, okay, I put them on a circle, and the energy is the vertical position, and the three different quantum numbers psi 1, they're here, and the energy is just the vertical position. And now I can make all possible physically interesting different energies by rotating this diagram. So you see here that 1 and 2 are degenerate. If I just say, well, instead of having the zero energy here, I just rotate it slightly by an angle. Let's call this angle theta. Then the other ones are also rotated. So here, see that E0, E1, and E2 are now no longer. Now you have still E0 is the smallest one, but E1 is greater than E2 if you rotate this way. So by this angle theta, you can just label the different energies. And the different lines that you see are different bands where, so in the ground state, everything will be. All of these will be zero, or with the identity, the psi zero. And then the first band here, I will have one non-trivial label. You know, it would be like one everywhere, but there's a psi here. But it can be anywhere, so it's a large degenerate band of states. And then the energies are, these are moving around as I change this angle that parameterizes the energies, and they cross. So if these lower bands are crossing each other, it means that the bands for only one excitation, the energies of the excitations are crossing each other. Okay, then I could do a bunch of perturbation theory, but let's not talk about that too much there. So there's an intuition from perturbation theory that, in principle, these bands, within a band, there should be no Q-dependent. No splitting of the energies that depends on this topological label. It's nearly done. But if there are bands that have that are crossing, then you can have splitting at low order. And so what happens is that if you sit at the angle phi equals zero, where these two are degenerate, then actually, yes, you have splitting already at first order. But if you sit somewhere generic, then you can numerically check and also make some arguments that there should be no processes that make the bands. The bands obviously get dispersive, but the states with different values of this number, they don't split from each other. Except if you have bands that are crossing. So if you look at a diagram like this, you see here's phi, which parameterizes all the way that the energies of the different domain walls can be. And here's the size of the F term. And if it's a light color, then there's no Q-dependent splitting. if the color is dark, then there is Q-dependent splitting. So you see at zero, we had this resonance, and there's a large Q-dependent splitting. And then at these other points, there's some more resonances. And actually, you can classify where all these resonance points are. And in fact, it turns out that they're dense. So if you, there are more and more of them as the system gets bigger. You can ask a bunch of interesting questions about them, like, do all these resonances cause Q dependence, so energy splitting that depends on the topological number at the bottom there? Are they dense everywhere on the angle axis? And where are the largest gaps between the resonances if you have a small finite system? And does it depend on which set n you take? And so all these questions we try to answer in this paper. So first of all, it turns out that not all the resonances split the degeneracy. So all the resonances are to do with that some combinations of domain walls are the same energy as other combinations of domain walls. They don't all split. And in this diagram, you see the black points are resonances that will split your topological degeneracy. And the red ones are ones where the topological degeneracy will not split. So these are all band crossings from the unperturbed model for a large chain, 30 sites. Actually, we were making some artwork, so we also did an 80-site chain and a 100-site chain. It's pretty amazing you can calculate this. If you change from Z3 to Z4, for example, then things are completely different, because then you have bands that don't just cross at some points, but they actually overlap completely. So they have resonances that some domain walls are just the same energy throughout the bands. So that means that they actually have splitting everywhere for all values of phi. You can look at this more carefully, and then it turns out that you can still have some amount of zero mode here. I could go into these answers in more detail if people are interested, but I think the main message of this talk is really that you can make this whole class of models, which just come from tensor categories, if you look at some of the simplest ones, they're actually coinciding with models that people have already studied in some detail, without knowing this, presumably, to show that they have topological zero modes, or don't have topological zero modes. And there's lots of interesting questions about what does it actually mean, you know, to have this topological degeneracy at higher energies, and models have these resonances that can even be dense, so that if you array from a resonance, in principle, it looks like you have this zero mode, but then there's always a resonance nearby that is spoiling it for you. But then if you look at finite size, you may still be able to get degeneracies up to some fairly high energy. So there's lots of interesting structure in these kind of problems. And I think it's a kind of an exciting direction to think about more, because you really want this higher energy degeneracy, because it would be helpful for topological quantum computation, for storing quantum information and not having it dephase if there happen to be some stray quasiparticles around, or if you have a non-zero density of quasiparticles at finite temperature. That's probably a good point to stop, because I'm already way late. Thank you.